Hello, this is Chris Payne here again, and welcome to my little video channel. And today, as promised, I'm going to tell you the story of Fate to Grey, how it was written and how it was initially recorded by myself and Billy Curry as an instrumental, and how it then went on to another process whereby Midgeur wrote the words and melody and produced it along with Rusty Egan for the Visage project. Anyway, it started off way back in 1976-77 when I was at Music College at Chichester. And originally it was a piece designed for piano. And although my piano skills weren't brilliant during at that particular time, I was concentrating on viola and medieval instruments, believe it or not. And to the despair of my dear piano teacher, Mr. Derek Austin, he was saying, "Oh, come on, boy, practice your scales." And of course, I completely ignored him, but I did have fun with the piano. And I wanted to always use, rather than being a great pianist, I wanted to use the skill, my talents as a piano player to write music. That was the original goal. Anyway, this is one of the first pieces I came up with, and if I just remove this flute, that's another story. That's for another project I'm working on with a dear friend of mine from Music College days called Mike Stewart, who went on to study with Sir John Taverner. But that's another story. Anyway, so the piece, I can't remember what I called it. It was a sort of romantic study, and knowing me, I was really into the pre-Raphaelite pictures at the time and painting, so it would have been something like The Drowning of Ophelia or something like that. Anyway, it would have gone roughly like this. Fundamental chords, which went on to become Fate to Grey. What happened was I was joined Gary Newman in late 78, early 79, and we'd obviously done the whistle test and Top of the Pops, and he got to number one with Our Friends Electric, the Pleasure Principle album, etc., etc. And we were due to go out on tour, and we were rehearsing in some place in Shepherd's Bush, I can't remember the name of it, but anyway, I was there, and the other keyboard player was Billy Curry, and Cedric on drums. We had Paul on bass. Russell had just joined us on guitar, and of course Gary. And during some downtime, I used to mess around playing the bass line of Fate to Grey on a mini Moog, and of course I had the mini Moog up here and the poly Moog, classic poly Moog down here, and I was playing the chords. And Billy just joined in with me one day, and he just said, "Well, I kind of like that. That's got something." And so he kind of added his little bits and pieces to something which really didn't have a structure at the time. It was just those sort of set of cyclic chords. And Cedric joined in, as I said, and we just kept banging it out. And during the tour, as the tour progressed, we developed it during sound check. And still we didn't really come out with a definitive arrangement, but we had this kind of these nice textures going on with the mini Moog bass line and the chords, and Billy using his ARP, and I think he had an Elka string machine or whatever else he had, then just adding to it, and Cedric putting a very nice drum pattern down. So anyway, we finished the tour. I remember the last day of the tour was in Sheffield, and we had a very nice evening chatting to a couple of members of the Human League, very nice too. And we travelled back to London, and Billy in the meantime had booked some time at Martin Rushen's studio called Genetic Sound near Reading. So anyway, it was all getting very exciting because we were going to go in and record what was to become Fate to Grey. At the time we didn't have a title for it, but the idea was, hang on, just revising my Pro Tools thing here, come on Pro Tools, don't leave me, there you go, thank you very much. And Yes, so it was good. What was happening at the time was Billy had finished the tour with us, and he was due to go back to Ultravox, and in fact he was in effect leaving Gary Newman. So as we got on so well, we thought that we'd release this as a Billy Curry Chris Payne solo instrumental, as a kind of keepsake really for the time that we had together, because we got on very, very well. And anyway, so that evening, it was the following day, the evening of the following day, we got back to London, and we booked into, we arrived at Martin's studio, set all our gear up, and I suddenly realised that the Mini Moog wasn't there. Oh, great. Well, the bass lines I was playing was on the Mini Moog, and it didn't arrive. So I thought, oh, fantastic, and just had a Poly Moog to work with. Now, obviously, the chords, as I've been through, are quite fundamental, and they were played on the classic Vox Humana. Let's see if I can find it. Is it on that one? There we go, that's the chat. Simple, of course we had the classic bass riff, which everybody, I get asked questions about this all the time. People are saying, well, what did he do it on? What instrument was it? You know, they couldn't work it out. I said, well, originally it was supposed to be a Mini Moog, but I just had the Poly Moog, and believe it or not, the reason it confuses a lot of people, this bass line, is because it's not done on a bass or a bass synth. It was actually the brass setting on the Poly Moog. And I just played it in a low key. So, and in fact, it works better because I could spread the, I had more of a range to spread the chords out. With the Mini Moog, it's quite restrictive because it only has two octaves. So this is what came out. See, that brass has a lot of attack on it, so you can get that sort of classic, which you wouldn't really be able to do on a lot of bass, on a lot of other sort of bass type of synths, you know, synths which are bass orientated. So that worked out very, very well indeed. But when we had to come to put it together, that was fun and games, because we started off with just the drum machine laying down a basic pattern, and bearing in mind this was the days when there were no sequencers, we just had 2-inch tape running, and we just ran down, you know, the just recorded on track one all the way through this drum machine pattern, and then it was up to us to play live to it. So I was thinking, oh gosh, well, let me start this off. So I do remember it wasn't any of this stuff I was doing with two hands. I just went through the arrangement as we kind of were rehearsing it during sound checks, but we hadn't really found anything definitive. So there's me playing away on the bass line, and there's Sid sort of moving around, you know, getting into the vibe of it, and there's Billy going, yeah, that's fine, that's great. So I managed to get to what became the middle section, and then I started going just... I was like, Bill, what do I do? And he said, great, carry on with that. Just carry on with that. And then I carried on with that. And I panicked and I stopped. And he said, that's fine. Just leave it a few bars. I've got an idea for it. And then he said, all right, just go back to the... track. it was that just dynamic moment. Sorry to be so animated, but it was like that in the studio. It was just sheer panic. And all of a sudden, we just launched into this D minor. Of course, that's the bit where, you know, the vocals come back in again, and it's just brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Then it went back to the A minor, C, E minor pattern, and that was just repeated to the end. Basically, that was my role in Fade to Grey, to create the bass line and the chords, and between us, we managed to get an arrangement together on the fly. Quite remarkable, really. But there you go, that's how we managed to do it. One other interesting thing I learned recently from Rusty, well, a few years ago from Rusty Egan, is that Adam Clayton, the bass player from U2, had tried to copy the bass line of Fade to Grey and couldn't quite get it together, but ended up writing their first major hit, which is New Year's Day. So indirectly, I was kind of responsible for that. And do I want royalties? No. But do I want to have a drink with Adam Clayton and shake his hand? Yes. So Adam, if you happen to listen to this and you just happen to be in France, give us a call. We'll go out for a beer. Thank you. Anyway, that's enough of that. Now, what happened next? Basically, that was my contribution. After I put these down, these chords down and the bass line down, Billy added his dynamic stuff, you know, the blah, 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 his violin, his keyboards at the beginning, and the ARP, etc., and all that wonderful stuff that he does. Cedric put down the drums, marvellous stuff, great solid drummer he was, God bless him, absolutely brilliant stuff. And then that was it. Then Billy went out into the big wide world and tried to get a deal for us as Billy Currie Chris Payne. And guess what? Nothing happened. And I'd forgotten all about it, to be honest with you. And then all of a sudden, one day, I had a call from Billy saying, listen, do you mind if it goes on the Visage album? I was going, well, yeah, what is it? And he explained it to me, and I said, yeah, fine, go ahead. Because Mitch had written a melody and lyrics for this instrumental. And of course, it became a song. It became Fade to Grey. And then the rest is history, as they say. But it's interesting because, I don't know, people have talked for years and years about, you know, who contributed what and how it was built and all that type of thing. Well, fundamentally, that's how it came about. Just a simple bass riff and chords, and Billy Currie realising that it had something, putting his magic on, and then Midge putting his magic on as well, and the production aspects of it went together, releases a single, and bam, number one in Germany. It set that whole movement off of kind of the Blitzclub new romantic thing with Steve Strange, etc. So, yeah, it's kind of quite pleasing to have been, you know, having a small part in that. Yeah, I think actually my dear friend Russell Bell from Gary Neumann Band, guitarist of Gary Neumann Band and dramatist, he to me sums it up by saying that, you know, the Fade to Grey was, when it was just myself and Billy, was a great instrumental. And when it became Fade to Grey as a song, with Midge doing the production and the vocals and the lyrics and the tune, it became a great song. And I think that's the best way to describe it. Okay, well, I hope that's been interesting for you to learn. And in the future, I'll be talking about other stuff, including actually just to, you know, complete a full circle of this. Glorious, which is a track I did for Rusty's album, involved myself and Midgeur again. And this time with Rusty contributing to it as well. And that's a song that I'll be, over the next couple of months or so, I'll play you my demo so you can hear how that started off and how Midge got hold of that and turned it into this absolutely fantastic song. Sort of history repeating itself, really. There you go. Anyway, you take care, everyone, and I'll see you and speak to you soon. Bye-bye now.